Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Lots of different things on the show this week. A little later, we're going to have a panel from the USC Center for the Political Future with Chris Matthews and David Chalian and Jessica Patterson and Ron Christie. And after that, a special story on a World War II vet who's 96 years old asking his congressman for help. But before we get to all of that, we start with Senator Alex Padilla. We met up with him out at the Port of Long Beach. And the port's, of course, so important right now. 40% of the entire country's goods come through the Port of Long Beach or the Port of Los Angeles. It is crucial for our supply system, which we know right now is not doing that well. Prices of everything have been up because of the backlog at the ports. You've been paying more for gas. You've been paying more for goods. A lot of stuff simply isn't on the shelves. You ordered furniture, it could be months and months before you get it. So what are they doing to fix that? They hope that this new bipartisan infrastructure bill will long-term fix it. $17 billion will be allocated to ports and waterways as part of it. So Senator Padilla got a bunch of politicians together at the port, met with some of the officials there, and after that, spoke with us. Senator Padilla, welcome back to The Issue Is. Good to see you.
Good to be seen. Thank you. Thank you.
I mean, it is beautiful here at the port, but we're also here because a lot of people are having a hard time paying for stuff because things are getting more expensive because I'm part of the backlog here. Everything from fuel costs to things you get at the grocery store. What's your message to people that are really concerned right now and that are wondering what's going on?
Look, I think there's a few things. Number one, there's some longer-term challenges that clearly our port infrastructure, our trade infrastructure has, and that's why we're moving in Congress together with the president to invest so significantly in infrastructure. It's not just roads and bridges and highways, it's ports, other areas of our infrastructure that can help keep the economy moving. There's longer-term issues that we need to invest in, and there's some short-term things that we can do and are being done. Things like making it easier for, you know, truckers to get the licenses and permits they need to be part of the solution. Things like imposing accountability for retailers who would prefer to leave cargo sitting at the port longer than needs to be the case. As soon as you start exercising measures like that, we've seen more than a 20% reduction of the amount of containers that are sitting on the ports at the time that they're sitting on the ship. So things are picking up. But I think bottom line is really the law of supply and demand, right? When there's choke points globally in trade, it's not just a Southern California issue, it's a global issue, then that impacts supply and demand. Good news is the economy kind of is coming back, and so there's more demand for goods. The holiday demand on top of regular demand. So it's been a little bit of a perfect storm for us, but we're working our way through some logistics, and I see things getting better.
Although it sounds like for the holiday season, there's still going to be some challenges. You're hoping past that, some of the congestion starts to ease, including $17 billion investment in ports and waterway as part of the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which is going to be signed on Monday. What specifically does that mean for the Port of Los Angeles, the Port of Long Beach? What does that look like, that extra money?
Yeah, that extra money for the ports of LA and Long Beach, which is critical, by the way, not just for Southern California, but for the country. 40% of cargo traffic that comes in to the United States comes in through these two ports alone. So we make things better, easier, more efficient. Everybody benefits. The whole nation benefits. You know, it's going to mean things like land acquisition, right? When ships come in, containers come off the ships, there's only so much capacity that these two ports have right now to park those containers while truckers pick up that cargo and carry it off, whether it's the stores here locally or throughout the country. So more land to work with for these ports will help improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the ports. There's a lot of port modernization that needs to happen. It'll never be completely automated, but additional automation and electrification. A big part of our environmental protection and climate agenda is electrification of port infrastructure, so we cause less emissions, not just for the planet, but for some of the surrounding communities.
And I know part of it also is they're hoping to get railway into the ports as well. So that's one bill that you guys passed recently. Then there's the other bill, the Build Back Better bill, which the House has been trying to work through. I know there's been some debate between Senators Manchin and Sinema about whether this is too big, what should happen. Take us inside the room. What's it like? Are you frustrated with them? Do you talk to them about that? Where are we at?
Somehow I think frustration needs to be built into the job description for any member of Congress. Fair. But look, here's my prediction. It's going to get done. And it's probably going to be with similar theatrics and drama as the bipartisan infrastructure package. We saw there was a deal, then there was no deal, then it was a deal, finally got out of the Senate, got out of the House, and next week will be signed by the president. The budget reconciliation process, right, part two, I think is equally significant because we're investing not just in roads and bridges and highways, but for the environmental protection of communities impacted by ports. That's an equal priority. For us, it's going to invest in healthcare, it's going to invest in housing, it's going to invest in childcare and the care economy. The reason that you see so much palace intrigue on what's happening amongst Democrats right. is because Republicans aren't playing ball.
Right?
It's almost shameful that not a single Republican right now is willing to vote for these necessary investments in our nation's infrastructure. So you're seeing the diversity of Democrats play out. But at the end of the day, we're going to come together behind a plan, and the people of the country and the economy is going to benefit.
I mean, do you ever, though, pull Joe Manchin aside and say, come on, man, you're killing me here?
Sometimes it's putting my arm around him. Sometimes it's, but look, that's the process at work, right? We've got to work together. We've got to try to negotiate. We've got to try to collaborate and find common ground. I'll tell you, it's a lot easier finding common ground with Senator Manchin, as different as West Virginia and California are, than some of my Republican colleagues on the other side of the aisle.
Well, and let's talk also just broader about where we are in this political moment. Joe Biden's poll numbers, not particularly strong. Vice President Harris's poll numbers, not particularly strong. We are at a moment where we just saw losses in Virginia and some, you know, struggles in New Jersey as well. What do you think voters are saying right now? And are you concerned, big picture, about where Democrats are at?
Yeah, look, I think here's what I believe. You know, next year's elections, if that's the lens people are thinking about, talking about, worrying about, we're going to see two things between now and next fall. Number one, we're going to have a much better handle on COVID. Right? Things were looking good earlier this year when vaccinations were ramping up. The Delta variant gave us a new challenge, but more recently we're talking boosters. We're talking vaccines, not just for kids as young as 12, but kids as young as 5, including my own. That's going to do us all a whole lot of good over the next year when it comes to the pandemic and the economic impacts of the pandemic. Number two, the bipartisan infrastructure package is getting done and signed. The budget reconciliation piece will be done soon enough, and we're going to see the economic benefits of those investments with more childcare, people in a better position to go back to work, right. with investments in housing. You know, we've seen whether it's the price affordability crisis in so many cities or how many people are experiencing homelessness and on and on and on.
And so lastly, because we've hung out with your kid here on the issue is, I know he got the vaccine this week. What was that experience like?
Oh my God, after a year and a half of the kids, you know, frustrated with mask mandates and, you know, remote schooling, but they're back in school in person now, they couldn't wait to get the vaccine. So excited that they offered to buy us ice cream, and I did not hesitate to take them up on the deal. So it was shots in arms, and an hour later, it was a chocolate chip for me.
Okay, very nice. Senator Padilla, great to see you. Thanks so much for being on the issue.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Senator Padilla. Next up, a really cool opportunity. This week, I got to moderate a panel for the USC Center for the Political Future, their Warsaw Conference, their big once-a-year conference, their main event. And with us on the panel this week is Chris Matthews, who, of course, was the host of Hardball on MSNBC and CNBC for 20 years, the author of the book Hardball and so many other books, and one of my role models as a kid that I used to love and watch. David Chalian, the political director at CNN, Jessica Milan Patterson, the chairperson for the California Republican Party, and Ron Christie, who runs a consulting firm, Christie Strategies Now, worked in the Bush White House as a special advisor to the president and also Vice President Dick Cheney. And so all of them together virtually from different parts of the world to talk about the midterms 2022 and where do we go from here? Take a listen.
Chris, where do you see the state of the 2022 race right now?
I think everyone's expecting the House to go Republican next time and the Senate to be up in the air. But basically, we're looking at a rotation situation. Winston Churchill, one of my heroes, said that never defend the government in a by-election, because everything people have, they don't like the weather, they don't like their marital situation, they don't like anything. They blame everything on the incumbent administration. I think the Republicans have 3 to 4 issues that they've already gunned up. One is critical race theory, or however that defines just about anything you don't like about the revisionist theory of how race has played a role in our history, which it clearly has. Socialism in the government, too much government spending, which leads to inflation, they will argue. Open borders. And this goes back to original 1940s Los Angeles thinking. Murray Chotiner, who was Richard Nixon's first advisor, said, the voter maxes out with 3 thoughts as he or she goes to vote. Make sure all 3 of those thoughts are about the opponent and make sure all 3 are negative. I think it's going to be a loss in the House of about 30 seats. That's what I think. I just looked at the 50 and 60 of the last. Democrats offer a big positive agenda when they come into office. A lot of things they want to do, they've been waiting to do for decades, they do them or try to. That's true with Bill Clinton. That's true with Barack Obama. That makes enemies. Machiavelli told us, coming in with new things is always going to have problems because people are more comfortable with the old. They're scared of the new.
I certainly agree with Chris's assessment that you're heading into an election environment in 2022 that is advantage Republicans. What I think is important about 22 that we could learn a little bit from last week's elections in Virginia and New Jersey. Joe Biden just a year ago won independent voters in Virginia by 19 percentage points. Glenn Youngkin just won them by 9 percentage points. That's a 28-point swing to the Republicans among independents.
House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy said it best. If you are a Democrat in a seat that Joe Biden won by 16 points, you are now in a targeted seat. And here in California, that adds on 6 more seats in addition to the 4 that we picked up in the last cycle.
I think this is really a parable for me of 2009. 2009, after the 2008 elections, the Democrats came in, they passed a sweeping healthcare reform measure, and the American people took stock of that and said, maybe the government's trying to do too much too soon. And of course, we saw what happened in the 2010 election cycle, 63 seats flipped from the Democrats to the Republicans. And President Obama at the time famously said that they've been shellacked. I think we're going to see a shellacking next year.
I'm curious, though, about the role of the big guy we haven't talked about yet, Donald Trump.
We have just had reporting at CNN this week that some of his advisors are really trying to convince him, like, there are places you can be very helpful, and there are some places, you know, Mr. President, that it would be less helpful for you to be involved with, and so stay away from those. But if he is going to be a dominant figure nationally in the midterm elections, that means that in some of these districts, that middle may not move as dramatically, potentially, to the Republican candidate.
I think Trump is so much smarter than the left thinks he is. He understood you don't touch Social Security, understood you don't touch Medicare. You don't mess with the real safety net from 64, 65. You don't mess with that stuff. As George Will said, the Americans are conservative. They want to conserve the New Deal. They also want to conserve the Great Society much. So he never messed with that. He said, get rid of stupid wars, and then I'm going to fight the Chinese. So if he wasn't such a bad guy on COVID, he would have won re-election. And that's why we're going to have very close elections with Trump coming back into this, as crazy as he is, because he's crazy like a fox.
I want to go around first for the Republicans. If the Republicans can make this the issue, they win. David Chalian.
The economy.
Jessica Patterson.
The economy.
Brian Christie.
Same for me.
Chris Matthews.
Sure. Okay. Although I think they've done a really good job with a critical race theory.
If the Democrats are able to win, this is going to be the top issue. David.
I mean, I don't want to give the same answer, I guess, but it's certainly, if the Democrats are able to win, it's going to be because people are feeling an economic revival that they have not yet felt. But I would say if Democrats are able to win, I'm sticking with the economy.
That's okay, Jessica.
It won't be on their record. It'll be about President Trump on January 6th.
Ron?
I'm going to stick with David. I think it's the economy. And I'm also going to piggyback on Jessica and say that they're going to try to relitigate Trump again, which is not going to be a winning issue for them.
And Chris?
They can't get away from it. They've got to fight this for the country. This is patriotic. They have to challenge what Trump did and January 6th. They have to go after this. Somebody's got to take that responsibility.
All right. Before I let that panel go, I wanted to do something that Chris Matthews had done on his show so many times that I used to love, a segment called Tell Me Something I Don't Know. Scoops and predictions from the panel where people were definitive and brought something to the table that not everybody was talking about. So I said, I got Chris Matthews. I want to try it. I've sort of stolen it on The Issue Is. Sometimes we call it The Issue Will Be. But for this one, I said, just straight up steal it. So here is Tell Me Something I Don't Know.
David Chalian, Tell Me Something I Don't Know.
Well, I'm going to make use of the fact that we have a newsmaker with Jessica here on the panel. And I want to ask Jessica, are you going to be the next national chair of the Republican National Committee? Because that's, that's what I've heard.
I am incredibly focused on being the chair of the California Republican Party. Trust me, that's a lot of work.
So that was not a no, if anybody's asking. And usually when it's not a no, that means yes. But we'll see. Jessica Patterson, Tell Me Something I Don't Know. And if you want to break that news right now, we're game.
The House majority will run right through California. What you do know is that California was responsible for bringing more new Republicans to the House of Representatives than any other state in the nation in 2020. We have up to 11 targets that are coming through our state this coming 2022. So we will make sure that we have a Speaker of the House that is not only from California, but is also a Republican.
That, of course, would be Kevin McCarthy. Ron Christie. I know you got to do this a lot on his show. Tell me something I don't know.
I did. I tell you, you look at the facade that all the Republicans are unified behind Donald Trump. Behind the scenes, there's a lot of angst and a lot of anxiety about Trump getting into this race. There will be a lot of people who will go to the former president and encourage him not to get in, to allow the Republicans a chance to have a viable shot of beating whoever the Democratic nominee is. But ultimately, I think Trump runs and it's too much for his ego to not have a rematch against Joe Biden, who he believes stole the show.
And finally, Chris Matthews, Tell Me Something I Don't Know.
Well, this is from another area, but my other area of interest is movies. And this is about a movie that will change your life if you get to see it, Belfast. I saw it last night, Kenneth Branagh's movie. It's about sectarian struggle in Ireland, Northern Ireland, where my grandmother came from. You're going to come out of that movie saying, my God, I know who the good guys are. I know who the bad guys are. And the ones that use religion or anything else to stir people against each other are the bad guys. And the ones who want peace are the good guys and the good women. It's an astoundingly good movie.
Now we got to check that movie out. You can watch the entire conference we were part of right now at youtube.com. Look at the USC Dornsife Center for the Political Futures page.
Our thanks to that panel. And now I got to check out that movie, right? Before we go, we want to acknowledge Veterans Day this week with a special story about a World War II vet organization that's helping him and a congressman who trying now to get him health care. Take a listen. On the left is Alan Taylor as an 18-year-old in the Navy. On the right, Alan, at 96 years old today. He served for more than 2.5 years during World War II. Afterwards, he never signed up for VA benefits and hasn't received a dime from the federal government ever since.
It would help.
Alan joins us from American Veterans First in Riverbank, where Duke Cooper is founder and CEO.
At 96, right, that's been a long time coming. But you know what? It's nothing. We don't go on the fact that what he deserves. It's he earned the right to have those benefits.
Their Congressman, Democrat Josh Harder, agrees. He says more than 100,000 World War II veterans don't receive any VA benefits. He's introduced a bill in Congress to change that.
My bill is crystal clear. It is dead simple. It is one paragraph. All it says is every World War II veteran is automatically enrolled in the VA healthcare system, automatically receiving all VA benefits, period.
Harder says the current process for elderly vets like Alan is just too confusing.
The system has way too much red tape, and it doesn't make any sense to hold folks like Alan to a decision that they made in 1950, 70 years ago, when, you know, they thought they were immortal.
For Harder, this is personal. His late grandfather served in the Pacific, and his late great uncle served in Normandy.
These are folks that quite literally fought fascism.
Harder says healthcare for vets like Alan is worth every penny. Alan has a message for members of Congress.
They ought to listen to the veterans a little bit because they ought to have a little bit of say-so about what goes on.
Our thanks to all of our vets that are listening right now. And our thanks to you, if you're not a vet, for listening as well. Please tell people about this show, share it out, review us, send me a note and social media. Would love to hear from you. I'm Alex Michelson, and we'll see you next time for more of The Issue Is.